Welcome to Why We Love Horror. I'm your host, Joshua Halstead, and I'm pleased to be joined today by Addison Binnick. Addison, how are you doing today?
I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm doing well. Doing well. Thanks for taking the time to sit down with me anyway.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
Of course. So, for those listening, Addison has a YouTube channel that's got a great series that's all about horror. He also does a series for Troma called Troll Masterpiece Theater, which is hilarious. So
thank you.
After the interview, we're going to talk about it a little bit more, but I just want to throw that in there up front as well. Guys, this guy knows what he's talking about when it comes to horror, and he is really, really funny. So go look him up. Go look up the shows that he does. They're very good. So let's jump in with the question sort of at the core of the heart of this series. Can you tell me why it is that you're so drawn to horror cinema?
Well, I just like the extreme nature that, just with horror movies, you know, you can get away with a lot more stuff, and there's a lot more content in there that's just, I don't know, it's just, I'm drawn to it more. I like monsters. I like being freaked out by stuff. I like, you know, that in a horror movie, there's all kinds of crazy stuff in there that you don't get with comedies or dramas or action movies. It's just something about the genre that lends itself to just more extreme, you know? Like with trauma movies, you get, you know, gratuitous nudity and heads exploding and all kinds of, like, entrails and stuff like that. I think that stuff is awesome, and I grew up watching that stuff. When I was a kid, my dad would rent me the Universal classic monster movies like Frankenstein and Dracula, Creature from the Black Lagoon, and that's where my love of horror started, just because I love monsters and monster movies and King Kong and Godzilla and all that stuff. I just think it's awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's funny you said that, because I say quite often on my shows, when I was growing up, I wasn't allowed to watch any horror made after about 1969.
My dad,
he doesn't like modern horror. He doesn't like the gore, the torture, stuff like that. So
I could see that, you know, coming from a certain era, for sure.
Yeah, and so, like, my dad would go rent all these old horror movies and stuff. And then when I got old enough that I could go rent for myself, I started renting them. And so I have this wide breadth of knowledge of horror films before 1969, because I watched, I think, just about every damn one of them. Because I couldn't watch any of the new stuff. So my love for horror started with, you know, the original House of Haunted Hill with Vincent Price, and the original House of Wax, and the Universal Monsters, and Hammer films, and which are like the one exception to the not 1969, because my dad liked Hammer films.
Yeah, those are great too. I grew up watching those as well. Christopher Lee, all those Draculas, and the Frankensteins with Peter Cushing, they're fantastic. I marathon all those ones. Whenever Halloween rolls around, I do marathons of the black and white Universal Monsters, and I do Hammer films, and that's my October.
Yes, absolutely. You know what I thought? This is a sidetrack, but I just, somebody who likes Hammer, somebody who can commiserate with this. I found a Hammer film on Blu-ray at the dollar store. Now, first of all, I bought it. Now I have a Hammer film on Blu-ray for a dollar. But why? Like, is it really that unpopular that it's, like, at the dollar store?
Which one was it?
That is a great question. It's one of the Dracula ones with Chris Lee. I don't remember which one it is. Let me check.
Depends on which one it is, because I know that, like, Dracula AD 1972, that one's not that popular because it's just kind of too campy. But I like that. I mean, I like that one, but I know that some people do not. I think the ones probably later on, that when Christopher Lee was just kind of like, he was even over the franchise, might be one of those ones.
Oh, so I just checked. So I was wrong. It's not one of the Jackson ones. It's Frankenstein Must Be Destroyed, which is a real fun movie.
Ones should end up in either public domain or, like, bargain bin, yeah, DVDs and Blu-rays and stuff. A dollar is really cheap. I've never seen one that cheap before, so that's a good grab.
Yeah, no, I was excited. I mean, occasionally, it's the only reason I go to the dollar store. Occasionally, they have, like, Blu-rays that it's almost like somebody got overstocked. It was like, crap, we don't need, you know, 600 Blu-rays of this or something.
Right, definitely.
Like, Neil Marshall's Dog Soldiers was there. Which is a really good movie, so I'm not sure.
No, that's great.
At the dollar store?
I regrettably lent mine to a friend of mine, and I never got it back, and I'll probably never see that again. So might be beneficial to hit up a dollar store. Maybe I can get my copy again.
Yeah, I did. I lent out my copy of Don't Breathe, which is just one of my favorite movies of all time, to a friend.
Yeah,
and then they moved with the movie.
It sucks when that happens, because it's like you entrust your thing that you like with a friend that you trust, but then they move away and they don't give it back, or I've had people like sell their entire movie collections, but like they forgot that my stuff was borrowed and mixed in with their library, so it's like, dude, you sold my thing,
Yeah, no, absolutely, it sucks. I got, by the way, the first Evil Dead movie I watched, this is a weird sidetrack, but it's good. The first Evil Dead movie I watched was Army of Darkness. And literally because I wasn't supposed to watch, I was 17. My dad didn't really want me watching the Evil Dead movies because the only one he knew anything about was the first one and the rape scene. But I was at a yard sale, and the guy's wife was making him sell his whole movie collection. And he had Army of Darkness, the bootleg edition that they put out. It's like the director's cut before they did an official release of the director's cut.
Right, right.
They had it on DVD, so I bought it, and it says, like, Bruce Campbell versus the Army of Darkness.
Mm-hmm.
And, but I looked it up, and I was like, there's no blood. Like, I was like, there's very little blood. There's no sex.
Basically PG-13, except for, I think, Bruce Campbell says once, and that's probably why it's R. I don't know.
I think it's just because it technically is an Evil Dead movie. I mean,
probably.
I put it on with my dad. I mean, I watched it before. I just told him, like, I got this, it's clean. And he was like, okay. And then I watched it, and I was like, this is great.
Goofball,
this is for my dad. Slapstick
comedy, Bruce Campbell versus a bunch of skeletons. Like, it's not very violent. It's funny.
Yeah, no.
It's the funniest of the three.
Yeah, no, it's funny. I showed it to him, and I had forgotten about the part at the beginning where they push the guy into the hole, and it just, like, spouts blood for, like, 2 minutes.
Oh, yeah, there's that. But, I mean, it's so over the top that it's, like, I don't know if you can really constitute that as gore. It's just like a fountain of red water, you know what I mean? There's no limbs, there's no entrails.
That would be so good. I love that movie so much.
I grew up watching all three of those all the time, too, and I think Evil Dead 2 is probably my favorite of the three, but Army of Darkness is definitely awesome.
It hurts. It hurts me deep in my soul. So I think Evil Dead 2 is my least favorite of the original trilogy.
Oh, really?
I mean, I could be wrong, except they kind of shift around. I know that the first one is by far my favorite. I really love Army of Darkness. I have a deep affinity for Army of Darkness.
Well, that makes sense. When you have a connection to something like that, you know.
Yeah. And, like, there's a lot I love about Evil Dead 2, but there's a lot that, the whole recapping the first movie, I get why they had to do it, but it's not good. They didn't do a good job recapping it.
I thought it was the best they could do. They didn't have the rights to any of the footage from the first one, so they basically just had to reshoot, what they could, and nix the friends and just have Linda there. For some reason, I didn't know that this was a thing, but some people think that Evil Dead 2 is like Ash taking another girlfriend to the same cabin. It's not supposed to like both movies go together. Like, it's literally a sequel where he survived the first one and then he's dumb enough to go back. Like, I don't know where people would, think that. Like, that seems insane, but... I mean, when you watch them back to back, you can kind of figure out, like, oh, this is just a recap of the first one, but they just didn't include the friends. I don't know. I thought that was a funny theory, though.
Have you done the master edit where you clip all three movies together by removing the things that don't work and you make one, like, 3 hour long movie?
No, I've never personally done that.
It's fun. Okay, so, next question. In the last few years, we've seen a real renaissance in the horror genre, with the landscape shifting largely towards more artsy, thought-provoking horror. Is that a change you're excited by, and do you think it'll help remove the stigma around horror cinema?
I think it's awesome, because we've been getting great horror movies by, like, Ari Aster, who made, like, Hereditary and Midsommar. Midsommar was probably my favorite horror movie that came out last year. I saw it in theaters 3 times. And then I liked The Lighthouse. That was really cool and crazy. But, you know, yeah, you're right. I mean, by having sort of, like, the artistic aspect to it, and with, like, Robert Pattinson and Willem Dafoe, I think that's, like, it's like a gateway thing. People kind of are, you know, they're seeing these movies they probably wouldn't normally see, and they're really bizarre. But because they're getting wide releases and because, like, famous people are in the movies, I think it's cool. Yeah, I'm all about it.
Awesome. So I mentioned the stigma around horror a moment ago, and there's a whole lot there, but I think it'll be unfair not to unpack that a little bit. And some of the reasons that many people say they aren't fans of the genre. So I want to start with what's probably the most common criticism, the perceived sexism within the genre, which really, we dive into in detail and stuff as we talk, but just as a jumping off point, do you think that's a fair critique?
Oh, well, I mean, in certain movies, sure, but I wouldn't categorize the entire genre like that. It's just certain filmmakers put certain things in their movies and, yeah, you know, it comes off either sexist or too extreme, but I don't think you should put the entire genre in that bubble. It's just depending on, you know, just pick out the examples, and, you know, those would be the problem films.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So I think that generally the argument is, like, that there's the vast majority of the films have some level of sexism, not all of them, or that there are things that play that way. So what's interesting to me about it, I was talking to somebody, and they kind of made the argument that anything that wouldn't be problematic on its own, but is considered problematic because it's consistent throughout the films in the genre, like, which isn't always a problem. I want to start with that. You work for Troma. I have to protect myself here.
I don't technically work for them or anything like that. I mean, they distribute stuff that I make, but you know, I've never been paid by them for anything that I've done, or, you know, I've only visited the building twice in my life, but I mean, yeah, you don't have to mince words with me, like, it's okay.
The well, because, you know, like, the gratuitous nudity in horror, I think Troma is an exception, genuinely. In general,
well,
because
definitely.
The whole point of Troma is to be outrageous, and it's clearly not made from a sexist point of view. It's made specifically to make fun of all of that. But, you know, like 80s slashers, everything is an excuse to get women naked, but the men are more often than not pretty fully clothed. Everything is an excuse to get women in these very sexual scenes and very sexual shots, and they're focused on, and, you know, the men are not. So somebody made the argument basically like, well, but that wouldn't be a problem if there was, you know, like, that's just a movie being made by a man who's straight. So
I think that that's sort of changing now, though. I mean, I've seen quite a handful of horror films that, like Midsommar, for example. I mean, you see full frontal male nudity in that movie. You know, it's pretty shocking. I mean, there's been all kinds of slasher movies and stuff, you know, where, you know, you'll see, you know, a man's ass or something like that during a sex scene. I think that maybe, like, in the 80s and stuff, like in the Friday the 13th and Halloween, like, yeah, okay, you know, a girl would get naked and maybe the male, you know, wasn't reciprocated. But I think that it's moving away towards that. But, again, that's just certain filmmakers who I think are, you know, wanting to, like, do that on purpose. And then you have a Troma films, they try to play at both sides where, you get a topless woman or a topless woman or a, you know, full frontal sex scene or something like that. But then the man will do something crazy too. He'll run around naked and it's just, I don't know. They try to widen their horizons because they know that both sexes watch trauma films.
Yeah, no, especially the first two things pop in my head for that from trauma are Terror Firmer, which has an excessively silly amount of nudity, but also has like a naked fat man just running around burying all.
That's actually my favorite trauma movie. I've seen that thing countless times, and I actually got in trouble when I first saw the movie when I was like 12, and I was obsessed with it. I was in middle school, and I had to write a persuasive speech about anything. So I wrote a positive film review about Terror Firmer and why my classmates should watch it. And my teacher was horrified because I was talking about everything like that's gratuitous in the film and disgusting and over the top and crazy. So she was, you know, horrified and disgusted, and she made me take my essay home. My parents had to read it and sign it to acknowledge that they know what I'm watching. But neither one of my parents cared because it was my dad who bought the DVD for me. Like, he knew what it was. He didn't care. So the next day when I returned to school and handed in my essay with my parents' signatures, my teacher was actually upset that my parents didn't punish me and gave me like a C minus or something like that. Not because like my essay was written poorly. It was because she was horrified by the content that I thought was totally unfair. But my essay worked, and like half my class ended up borrowing my copy of Terror Firmer. So I thought that I deserved an A. But so you know, that was like, you know, over 15 years ago, and now like, you know, I'm doing stuff with trauma and like they're distributing my stuff. So it's just kind of one of those full circle things that's kind of cool.
But, yeah, absolutely.
Terror Firmer did get me in trouble.
Terror Firmer. So I'll just say, I guess I'll give two sides. So one of my best friends who I'm interviewing for this, he's a radio show host. He loves Terror Firmer. It is his favorite trauma film. He has a deep, deep fear of escalators because of that movie. Because he saw it at a young age. I personally, like, I saw it.
Well, it's a disgusting movie. It is not for everybody. Like,
yeah, I mean, it's pretty hard to offend me, and I love trauma, but that one.
Yeah, that movie has everything. Even, I've talked to Lloyd about that movie, and he was like, I can't believe that we made this movie, you know? Like, the 20th anniversary Blu-ray is coming out soon, and, like, I talked to him about it maybe a year or two ago. Because I told him, you know, same thing, my favorite trauma film. He's like, yeah, the sickos really love that one. I just thought that was really fun.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I have to give a great Lloyd quote later in the interview. I'll find a time. So the other example from trauma where, like, yes, there's a lot of gratuitous female nudity, but it's also countered at least somewhat, is Return to Nukem High, Volume 2. Volume 1. Volume 1, where there's, like, the whole joke. Actually, this is a good time for that quote because it relates to this. So the whole thing is they basically made the core couple of Nukem High be lesbians this time instead of a man and a woman. And when I went in, I went to the premiere of part two, and I helped Lloyd set up his merch table, and then I wore the Toxie mask and stood in front of the screen and introduced the movie with him and stuff, and got to have some good conversations like that. But he was on stage, and it was at a theater that the owner, who I love, very feminist, and Lloyd is up there, and he's introducing the film, and he's saying what it is, and he goes, and then we made it lesbian, so there could be lots of hot lesbian action, and and the feminist is like, you know, Lloyd, not all lesbians are hot 18-year-olds with huge sex drives, and he goes, right. They are in f***ing Traumaville, baby.
Yes, of course.
And which is, like, the most Lloyd moment ever, and it's so funny. But that movie is just filled with gratuitous sexual content. But there's also, like, they're not real, but they're filled with dicks and stuff. Like, when she grows the, like, 15-foot-long giant penis and starts beating people up with it and stuff like that.
Zach Amico goes full frontal multiple times, and he's got a Prince Albert piercing. Like, that's pretty shocking to see in a movie, you know? Like, a full naked man with a Prince Albert piercing, and he's, like, bopping in on someone's head. Like, that's pretty crazy.
Yeah, those movies certainly are shocking. But, I mean, that's the thing, is that they're meant to be shocking, so they have nudity from both genders. They have sexual content from both genders. And, ironically, I want to do a full analysis on this for one of the episodes of Shock Culture for my regular show, but there is a surprising amount of the scenes with the depict nudity and sexual content in trauma films that are intentionally not shot in a sexual way or don't seem to be. We're like, here's just a naked person, and the camera doesn't do what the camera normally does in sex scenes.
Absolutely. That's, to me, some of the funniest kind of nudity that trauma does. And if I don't do that, I'm usually disappointed because it's just so – it's like a throwaway where there's like an actual – scene that's happening with dialogue and there's exposition, but for no goddamn reason there's a naked chick in the background just standing there, and it's like, I don't know why she's there, but it's funny that she is. I don't know, that stuff is really amusing to me.
Yeah, I agree, and it also goes a long way. You know, I do get bothered when I watch horror films and I see that, like, man, there's a lot of, like, just really wanting the women to be topless and characterless and the men to be the big strong men that come save the day. So it's fun with trauma that I can't really think of a single trauma film that does that. I mean, even like, I think they just bought the rights to distribute, but still, Graduation Day. Even Graduation Day, there's a heavy focus on sexualizing both genders. There's not like, big strong man comes and saves the day. Like, there's actually more to it, and they're self-aware. And Seth Hoffman himself is actually very aware of actual issues within the genre. And his films, like, are making fun of
he's
that.
He's not just making – I mean, his movies do have excessive nudity and fart jokes and crazy gore, but he also – you know, with his films, he also has something to say. There's always some sort of – political topic or social satire that's going on. I mean, it is schlock entertainment, but not sort of the, like, lower level, you know, crap. Some people might still perceive it that way because of the content being so extreme, but, you know, with something like Poltergeist, I mean, that was a movie that was made 13 years ago, and it's, you know, all about making fun of, you know, fast food and corporate media and stuff like that, and it's still topical. There's people, there's scenes where people are shitting themselves to death, sure, and that might offend some people, but there's a deeper layer to it if you can kind of look past the shitting scenes.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, especially, I know it's not one of the more popular, but even Trauma's War. Is a very political piece.
Yes, absolutely. Unfortunately, I think, not a lot of people either have seen that or are fans of it, or I don't really know. I think because I've only really been familiar with it, like, on DVD and Blu-ray and stuff, and it's uncut form, from what I understand, when it got released in theaters back in the 80s, I mean, it got completely shredded to get an R rating. So I think that the people who initially saw it probably hated it because it wasn't the unrated director's cut. You know, it was the heavily sanitized, censored version that, you know, why would you ever want to watch a censored version of a trauma film? So, you know, it's out on Blu-ray now and everything, and it's pretty cool, but I feel like out of all of Lloyd's movies, that one might be kind of the most, like, glossed over or something like that, because they get all the Toxie movies and Tromeo and Nukem Highs, but for some reason I think Trauma's War, I don't see very many people talking about that one.
Which is a shame. I actually think it's really fun. It's funny to me. You were talking about that, talking about the different some of the different trauma films. So that it's funny. You said who would want to watch a sanitized version of a trauma film? They've been trying to do a sanitized version of Toxic Avenger, for...
It would be impossible.
So long. Well, they're still trying to, and with Kaufman's blessing, I guess, which, I mean, I guess should make me feel like they're going to have some respect for it.
When, like, I'm all for a Toxic Avenger big budget remake, only because I know that Troma would get a huge payout from that, and would get, you know, a Toxic Avenger 5 from Lloyd. Like, that's the only reason why I would really be rooting for a remake. Because if we get, some PG-13 remake, and it's just some random thing, even if it bombs, Troma is going to get a paycheck, and even $1 million would probably cover, you know, 2 more Toxic Avenger sequels. So I'd say, like, remake it, you know, get Troma those residuals.
Yeah, I mean, so I can see Toxic Avenger is maybe the only Troma franchise or film or whatever that I can actually see working PG-13, but there's only kind of one or two ways I can see it working, and I don't think they'd do it. If they got Sam Raimi to do it, say PG-13. You can be the hard line of PG-13. Now you can actually show some blood and some gore.
Right.
You can have suggestive content, but it has to be PG-13, and they let Raimi run with it. I mean, Raimi did a great campy horror movie that pushed the edge of what you can put in PG-13 with Drag Me to Hell. So,
yeah, I love that movie.
I think Raimi could pull it off. The only other way I can see it is they did that Toxic Avenger the musical on Broadway. It's really good, and it's pretty clean. They sort of poke fun at themselves by making it cleaner, by making it sweeter, more focused on the love story.
Yeah.
They still have violence over that, but they kind of are able to...
Yeah, you can't rip somebody's head off on stage and shove a mop up their butt.
yeah, exactly. And so it becomes really fun. So if they did that, and they kept the sort of silly, schlocky tone, similar to Reefer Madness, the musical, where, like, it's clearly supposed to be funny that it's this sanitized love musical with, like, this monster in it.
I feel like what they're probably going to do is try to make it a more serious type action movie, just because it's Legendary Pictures who has the rights to it right now. And, you know, they've been doing those, like, Godzilla movies and stuff like that, and those are, like, super serious in tone. So I would just assume that they would probably just try to make it a PG-13, like, action movie, like Batman or something like that, and have it a little bit darker. But I could be wrong. I have no idea.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest. If something says Toxic Avenger, I'm going to go see it.
I will too. I don't care.
Okay, so I think it's only fair while we're talking about representation to acknowledge and briefly discuss what I contend is a very real issue within the genre, which is the lack of strong representation for minorities and LGBTQ+ members. Which, by the way, we're talking a lot about Troma in this episode. Troma is way better about this than
absolutely
anybody else. But can you talk to me about how you think that the genre in general handles that, and then how you think Troma does, since this is a very Troma-heavy episode?
Well, I mean, all that kind of stuff, it pisses people off, you know, when there's either too much representation or... A lot of people, like the mainstream audiences, I don't think they like seeing, you know, gay people, lesbians, you know, minorities in leading roles. And I think, like, that sucks. You know, that's just how it is, though, and it's fucked up. And Troma uses that, I think, for, like, they do it on purpose. You know, they'll cast a whole group of, you know, young teenagers, all races, all... sexual orientation, and they, you know, wave it proudly, you know. But I mean, even look at the Oscars, like, everyone's all up in arms that there, you know, was no female directors that were nominated, you know, and that's pretty fucked up, but that's just fortunately how it goes.
Yeah, and, well, I mean, to be fair, with the Oscars, it's because every year they do this, almost every year. And Todd Phillips is a shit director who directed a film that's pretty good and then made a bunch of horribly, horribly offensive comments, including comments that seems disparaging to women, and then they nominated him over Greta Gerwig.
Right.
There is.
I know.
It's
fucked up.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, I mean, I was mad about almost every category in the Oscars, not just from a representation standpoint, but from a why the hell is Adam Sandler not nominated standpoint. Because Uncut Gems.
I actually haven't seen Uncut Gems yet, but it's on my list.
Dude, it's so good. It's so good.
I keep hearing good things.
No love for Uncut Gems.
Yeah, I think it's just no love for Adam Sandler. Like, they don't want him. You know, don't invite him to the Oscars.
You know what he said, though? He said that if
he
didn't get nominated,
yeah.
He was going to go make,
he's gonna make a bad movie. You
know
he already made
do?
The worst movie ever. Like,
Jack and Jill?
Yeah, he already made the worst movie ever. Like, Jack and Jill is an abysmal train wreck. If he can make something
worse
than that, not only will I still see it, because I'm an idiot, you know, I'd riff it too. I don't care. Like, I've riffed Jack and Jill for movies to watch on a rainy afternoon because it was so awful. But that movie with him and Andy Samberg, that's my boy. That's one of one of two movies that I've ever walked out of the theater on, and that's one of them. I had enough.
The Grudge, I was so close. I had to walk out for a second and, like, catch my breath.
I saw
that
with a friend of
mine
on opening day, and his cell phone went off. So he stepped out to answer his call, and he came back. He said that was the best part of the movie, was that he got to go on a 5-minute cell phone break. Because, yeah, that movie was horrible. Like, what a horrible way to begin the new year, was to go see The Grudge.
Oh, man. Yeah, no, I went and saw it on that Thursday for the opening night, and oh, my gosh. It was so
horrible.
You know, the best way for Adam Sandler to make a film that will offend every Oscar voter? Team with Troma.
Yeah.
And make a movie where Adam Sandler is not only the lead character, but also the killer.
I mean, I'm still watching, you know, I don't care. Like, a lot of people, I mean, even myself, you know, we shit on Adam Sandler, but for some reason, still watch his movies. I guess I'm part of the problem. I don't know. It's just one of those things where occasionally, like, a good one will, like, pop up on Netflix amongst, you know, the ones that aren't so good.
Yeah, I mean, I love him, and I grew up watching his stuff. I certainly do not like most of his newer films, but I really like him, and I would rather support the career of somebody who I like, even if I don't love all their movies. But I will say The Week Of on Netflix with him and Chris Rock is super good, and I have no idea why critics didn't like it.
That one I haven't seen yet. I did like the one that he did with David Spade, The Do-Over.
That one was pretty funny. I don't know why I'd say it's good, but it's fun.
Yeah, I mean, I only watched it the one time, but I thought it was, you know, better than some of the stuff that came out theatrically, like Jack and Jill or That's My Boy.
I
watched
that
new one with him and Jennifer Aniston.
That one was
Which
good.
One?
The new one with Jen Aniston and him is really good.
Yeah, I thought that one was pretty good for sort of a straight-to-Netflix, you know, crime, comedy, mystery thing. You know, it was okay. It was probably for the best that it wasn't released theatrically because it wasn't that good. But, I mean, for a Netflix thing, sure. Afternoon time killer.
Dude, wait a second. They're wanting to do Toxic Avenger PG-13. Adam Sandler should play the Toxic Avenger.
Well, he's not necessarily a 90-pound nerd anymore. You know, he's, what, in his 40s, 50s? I mean, 50s. Maybe under the sludge makeup, possibly. You know, yeah, he could fight some crime and crack jokes and stuff. The Academy would definitely... It would shoo him away for sure.
Yeah. So the, I think it'd be really fun to get him and then have some ridiculously hot woman play his love interest, like in every Sandler film.
Right, Selma Hayek.
Yeah, exactly. So we're getting to the last couple of questions here. I want to go ahead and address, the other major concern that I hear people have with the genre, which is the depictions of violence and the concern that the depictions of violence, will perpetuate violence in the real world. Do you think that sometimes that can be the case, and do you think that it can a line can be crossed regarding the violence that they depict, especially violence against women?
No, I don't think that violence in movies translates to violence in the real world. I hate that argument because, I mean, I'll watch Hostel or Saw or, you know, the ending of, you know, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood or something, and it's just like a wall-to-wall blood fest of Brad Pitt just kicking ass or all kinds of crazy violent movies. I'm not a violent person. I think just a violent person is a violent person. They're just going to do, you know, what's in their nature, and I don't think violence in movies influences people to do violent things. I mean, not in a grand scheme or anything. I mean, if someone is saying that, like, they were influenced by the movie, they were probably already fucked up to begin with. And it's not the movie's fault. It's not cinema's fault. It's, you know, it's just entertainment. And some people who don't like violence or gore, then don't watch it. It's not for you. I love the shit. And I think it's a lot of fun. But at the end of the day, it's just latex and Carol syrup dyed red. Like, I don't know. I mean, that's a personal preference. Like, if that shit offends you, don't look at it. But I don't think it's going to make people homicidal maniacs. If, you know, people have tendencies to be violent, that's just them. That's on them.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, it's funny to me, the idea that, like, well, this person says they were inspired by such, well, yeah, but look at the number of people that watched that movie, and then look at the number of them that went and killed people because of it. So either...
Right, none.
It's hyper-specialized, or some people are just looking for an excuse to be violent.
Yeah. Or that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, they blame video games, they blame, you know, heavy metal music. People are always looking for something to blame rather than just the individual. Like, a serial killer who's going around and killing people, they're just doing that because they're fucking insane. They're just, like, that's just them. Okay, so maybe they happen to watch Texas Chainsaw Massacre or something, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's the movie's fault.
Yeah, exactly. So do you think that genre filmmakers are getting better about representation?
I think so. I think maybe there was a certain time when movies just kind of like horror movies in the 80s, slasher films and stuff like that, just kind of copied off each other. So that's why there were so many movies that were like the same or very similar to each other. Like Friday the 13th is just a copy of Halloween, but Halloween is just a copy of Black Christmas. It's just a kind of a formula. But, I mean, there's certain genre filmmakers, unfortunately some who are no longer around, you know, they made it a point to have, like, strong female leads and stuff like that, like George Romero with Day of the Dead and, you know, Land of the Dead. He had, you know, Dario Argento's daughter as a, you know, badass chick in the lead and stuff like that. Not everyone does that, unfortunately. But I think that it's definitely happening. It's more of a thing now than it probably used to be. You know, Mila Jovovich, she headlines the entire Resident Evil franchise. And franchise might not be the best in the world, but, you know, that's her franchise, and, you know, it's written and directed by her husband, you know, and he, you know, Rob Zombie cast his wife in all of his movies and stuff. Not a lot of people like that either, but, you know, she kicks ass in those movies and stuff.
Yeah. Okay.
But it's there.
Absolutely.
It's there. It's not as prominent, you know, as maybe it should be, but I think it is there more so than it used to be.
Absolutely. So the last question here, if you could give one piece of advice to horror filmmakers, whether it has to do with representation or, you know, whatever else, what would it be?
I don't know. I mean, it's just, I just do stuff and hopefully, you know, somebody might like it or it might be seen by somebody who, you know, could do something with it. Because, I mean, I've been doing Movies to Watch on a Rainy Afternoon episodes since 2011, and I've got 122 episodes up on YouTube. But Troma saw one episode, and they liked it, so I got in contact with them. And I've been basically just working with them for the last 3 years now, whenever I want to make a video or use clips or do something with Troma-related product, I get Lloyd's permission first before I move forward with anything. And if I want to sell DVDs, I get his permission for that as well. But it took a long time before anybody saw, before Troma saw something and did anything with it. So, you know, if I've been doing it since 2011, it wasn't until like 2016 when I got in contact with Troma. So that's 5 years of just like doing stuff for YouTube for free just because I wanted to do stuff. And sometimes you got to put in that kind of time before anything really takes off. So you got to have patience and just keep putting stuff out there, really. I mean, if you want to get noticed or if you want to be a horror filmmaker and stuff, or you want to do stuff, you just have to do it. And there's going to be times where, you know, you're just going to want to throw in the towel and say, fuck it, no one's watching this shit. But you just have to keep doing it. If that's what you want to do.
All right. Yeah, absolutely. Awesome. Well, then, so that was the end of the official interview, but let's really quickly talk about what you do. So you have a YouTube channel that has a show called Movies to Watch on a rainy afternoon. I will someday remember the name of that. I watched
a bunch of
episodes, and it was really good.
Thank you. Did you have one in particular that stood out to you?
I watched the Jack and Jill one.
Okay. All right. Interesting. All right.
It was funny. I just kind of scrolled through and clicked on them. I to be honest,
no,
I
no
was
worries.
In the middle of the night, so I can't think
okay.
of individual movies.
No,
but I did watch it, and I thought it was funny. I did watch the first episode of Troma Masterpiece Theater, which is great. And your second episode comes out next week, right?
Well, I've got DVDs, actually. My DVDs arrived earlier than I anticipated because I was tracking them. They were supposed to come on Friday, but they came in yesterday. So I have them in stock. I'm currently packaging up orders for Kickstarter backers and mailing them out. And I have another shipment coming in this weekend, so I'll have a whole bunch. Troma currently has my file, and they're going to be uploading it to Troma Now probably next month. Usually what they do for Troma Now is on the first of every new month, they dump a whole bunch of content on there. So you get like six new things at once, or one big thing if they have like one big movie that they want to premiere on Troma Now. So I'd say Troma Masterpiece has a safe bet of getting on there February 1st. So it could either be streamed there or DVDs through me, through like eBay or Etsy. I've got accounts on both.
Awesome. So, and it's for, the second episode is Night of the Chicken Dead, right? Poltergeist?
Yep.
Awesome.
Yeah, Lloyd
so
picked
anybody
that.
That hasn't
Lloyd picks all the movies that I do.
Oh, awesome.
What was that?
Oh, I was just going to say, Poltergeist is fantastic. It's
oh, yeah.
really fun.
That was the did you watch all of episode one? Were you able to, like, muster through that? Because that Battle
oh, yeah,
of
yeah,
Return
yeah.
is,
really
is fun. It's a tough movie. A lot of people either jump ship or watch it in chunks. Like, they can't sit through the entire episode in one sitting, and I don't blame them. You know, we had to watch Battle of Love's Return like 7 times to get all those jokes and stuff. And even then, I don't think it was enough. But by that point, we were just like over it. We didn't want to watch Battle of Love's Return anymore. Since then, I've seen Battle of Love's Return like 15 times. So the movie doesn't do anything for me anymore. I can sit through it and it's no big deal. But it's always fun when I show it to somebody who's never seen Battle of Love's Return before and I'm reminded how difficult it is to watch that movie, even with the riffing, because they just can't deal with it. Like, that's a tough, boring movie. And Lloyd is one of the first people to admit that he's, like, embarrassed by that film. And he's only 25 when he made it. And, you know, he didn't care that we eviscerated it because he's well aware that the movie sucks. But so then the big challenge was doing Poltergeist as our second episode. Like, after Battle of Love's Return, which was this horrible film that I thought was unriffable until we really, like, started chipping away at it. Then we were given Poltergeist, and I was like, okay, well, this movie's fantastic. You know, it's full of nudity, it's full of gore, it's a musical. How do we riff this? So, again, we just started chipping away at it, and I've gotten some of the best reviews for anything that I've ever done. So, to me, that's a success, and I've submitted it to festivals. Troma has it. I haven't gotten any feedback from Lloyd yet. I don't know if he's seen it yet. I've mainly just been contacting and corresponding through his editor, or Troma's editor and his assistant. So we'll see, you know, what happens. There's no plans for an episode 3 yet. I haven't gotten any approvals or anything, but I'm kind of just riding the wave of episode 2 right now, just because it was such a long process of making it that I kind of just want to break.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, awesome. Thank you for sitting down with me, man.
Yeah, definitely.